What's good? Welcome to the What's Good podcast. I'm your host, Milton Young. Welcome to episode 13, another solo podcast. I'm happy to bring you this podcast. There's a lot of some, I got some really, really good content from my class on Saturday with Bill Keller. I know I told you guys earlier this week that I was going to be doing, we're going to be submitting jokes this week to get ready for the show. This week, what I was able to do was submit my jokes to Bill, and he was able to go through my whole entire act and just kind of just break down some of the jokes and try to figure out what I was trying to accomplish, how he can make it better, how we can improve the concepts. And I just want people that are thinking about doing comedy, that are doing comedy, that have it on their bucket list, that just want to climb up in front of a open mic one day and just try it out. I want you to listen to this because there's so much valuable information that comes from this legendary man. I think in one of my earlier podcasts, I mentioned Jerry Springer, that he'd work with Jerry Springer. No, it was Jerry Seinfeld for that. And I appreciate the people that reached out to me very tactfully and informed me of that change. I remember Joe Rogan talking about his audience or viewers or support, whatever, doing that to him. So it was really cool when I had like five or six people reach out to me and do the same thing. So thank you. But those are the people that he's worked with. So I have I'm very lucky and very fortunate to have such a talented person look at my routine and kind of pick it apart. So I made sure that I was doing my morning pages this for the last couple of weeks. I mean, I haven't been consistent with it, and I know that in order for the best time for your morning pages to be effective is it's the first thing that you do in the morning. But I didn't do that. I haven't been doing it. But I have been getting in those 3 pages of long of handwriting. Anybody wants me to go through that morning page routine, I can explain that to you in another episode. But I just want to dive into this content because it's so good. So what I was able to do was in class, I recorded some footage of Bill talking about confidence. He was talking about working different audiences, be it a smaller audience versus a big audience. And then at the end, he's going to deconstruct some of my jokes. I think it's all fair for you guys to just figure out so you can understand where the jokes come from. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'll go through the first main one, which I think that's the one that he spent most of his time dissecting. I think it's the one where he made the biggest impact with the joke, with just the minor changes that he made. Next week, it's going to be a even more intense session because I plan on hitting with like another 30 jokes. I say 30 jokes like it's nothing. And typically, depends on if you're a fast writer or not. But if you're fast, you can pretty much pump out. Well, Woody Allen would write 100 jokes. And out of that 100 jokes, he'd get 10 jokes that he could actually take to the stage with him. And out of the 10 jokes, he probably got 4 that actually worked in front of an audience. So that's just to give you an idea that how much work you have to put in to get a joke that works. And I'm not Woody Allen. So imagine how many jokes I have to write to get my jokes to work. So 45 and 30, I mean, it's not really a lot of jokes. I mean, it is. I gotta give myself credit. It's a lot of jokes, but out of that list, I mean, even after reading them the first time on stage in the front of the class on Saturday, I realized that a lot of them, they're just not really strong enough for me to bring to the stage. So, right down from the 45, I'm already down to 40 that I want. Out of the 40, we're going to find, you know, the top 30 that I like. And then hopefully from the other 30 that I submit, we can grab, you know, maybe 5 and add that on. And we're going to try to mold that into, you know, 5 to 8 minutes of material. I'm trying to go for 8 minutes of material because it'd be the longest time I've been on stage. I kind of wrote with the intent of doing that. Having 75 jokes is pretty much, that's the intent of having that. So what I did was I recorded Bill with his permission of him breaking down my jokes, him talking about confidence. And I want you guys to just listen. This is truly a legend speaking. And for someone that's thinking about getting into comedy, this is someone that tells an awesome story about how Jerry Seinfeld kind of gave him a tip on how to improve his comedy on stage. And you guys are going to get that raw. And to give you an idea, I mean, I've already done a paid act. I've done my first paid act. So technically I'm a professional comedian. And the classes that I took before, some of the jokes that I used when I was with Bill or some of the jokes that I used in my act. And it was amazing because they all worked. So, and it was for the United States Air Force, one of the Albany divisions. And it was at Rivers Casino. So it was a nice show. It was done well and people came there to laugh. The organization threw it was like a really, really good catered event and it was at Rivers Casino in New York. So to be there and be in front of these people, I had nerves going through me, but I knew that Bill's material was rock solid and it would work and he wouldn't give me material that wouldn't work on stage. So luckily you guys can kind of see some of the workings of that, some of the workings of him helping me craft the joke, him helping me break down the parts of the joke that worked and parts of the jokes that didn't work. The first joke that we're going to take a look at it's an interesting one. So before I start playing the recording, I just want to give you a little bit of history on some of it because I think there's two jokes in there that I remember that he went over. I know them by heart so far. Because the first round of drafts, right? I don't know how many pages this was. I think it ended up being 20, or at least it's 20 pages now of handwritten content to come up with these 45 jokes. And when I was writing them, you really have to try to pull from a mixture of real-life scenarios and then mix it up with fake scenarios that are funny, because I'll laugh at something. And then it's like, okay, how can I get other people to laugh? So I was texting with a friend, and they sent over the wrong time. They spelt it out, but they spelt it wrong. And it didn't spell correct because it was so wrong. And I came back with a snide remark. And I thought it was cool. I'm like, all right, that was funny. It was a funny exchange. And the snack bag was pretty funny. So let me see if I can turn this into something that's funny. Something that an audience would relate to and think was funny. So I had to make it sexy, and I did. And I think the angle that I was trying to take was pretty slick. Bill thought it was pretty slick because he did a tackle the joke, meaning it was one of the first of the 45 that he looked at. And it was one of the first of the 45 that he was able to actually put a nice little swing on it, which is really cool. The other part, another one of the jokes was, and you'll know what joke it is, obviously. The other one is a joke about my ex-wife, and it's a joke. It's definitely a joke, but the audience, when they're there in the moment and how angry I get in my act about talking about divorce, it'll come off very strong. So that's the other thing. When people listen to comics or comics go up and they're preparing an act, they think that everything that's in their act has to be 150% true. No, the best comics are the best exaggerators. You exaggerate everything, you know? Like, I talk about all kinds of things in my act, but how big you are, how tall you are, how short you are, how strong you are, all these things, how dark you are, you know, how angry you are at somebody, how funny, all these things have to be exaggerated in order for them to be funny. It's the comparison. That's what's hilarious about it, you know? Whenever a comedian is being funny, like, you look at any of the characters that are peeled into your head, like, you look, for example, Martin Lawrence, which is personally one of my favorite comedians. Why is he one of my favorite comedians? Is because he creates memorable characters that are burned into your head that you remember. You'll never forget any of the characters that Martin Lawrence does. If you're like a true fan of Martin Lawrence, they're just so memorable and they're just so powerful. One of my favorite characters that Martin does and will light up any audience, even if he does the voice, was Shanaynay. And the reason why Shanaynay was so funny was because of all the over-exaggerations that he made. Her over-exaggerated makeup, her over-exaggerated hair, her lips, how aggressive she was in terms of coming on to him, just her swag. It was just all over exaggerated and was hilarious. Her butt, her bosom, her shoes, the color of her, like, everything was just, it was just over exaggerated with any of the characters that he did, the martial arts character that he did, you know. Or let's go to Jim Carrey. Look at Jim Carrey when he did Fire Marshal Bill, that's in Living Color. That character is super, super over-exaggerated, and it's because of those over-exaggerations why we love those characters. So it's the same thing that I try to work into my comedy. How angry I am, how upset I am, how whatever. It's just a part of it. So I'm saying that not to defend my work, because I don't got to defend my work to anybody, but to educate people that are thinking about getting into comedy, and for people that are like thinking, oh, well, I shouldn't do that. Or people that get offended, you know, when you go to a comedy show and someone says something to you in a comedy show and you get offended. Don't get offended. It's a comedy show. It's comedy. It's funny. They're trying to be funny. And maybe their humor doesn't connect with you, but chances are it's not. You're just a placemat. What do I mean by that? So I've had friends come to visit, and they wanted us to go out, me and Anthony, to do comedy, stand-up comedy, just so they could see our routine, because they'd have an interest in it. They want to see if we're good. And I think kind of they kind of want to see if we'll step on stage. But we've done it so much now that there's no reason to be afraid of getting on stage. We just get up on stage and just do our thing. But I remember one time I was talking about marriage and a certain dynamic about marriage, which is an over-exaggeration about the lack of sex in marriages, which for most husbands listening to this probably are thinking it's not an over-exaggeration. And for the women that are wives, there's many of them that are thinking it's not an over-exaggeration, but it is. A lot of people talk about it. And it's something funny that comics pick on. And I yelled out into the audience, right, Joe? And he laughed, and the audience laughed. They thought it was hilarious that I knew him and that I was relating it to him. But immediately his wife got a little offended, because she thought I was relating to that, you know, Joe doesn't get enough sex in his marriage, which she was very confident and very believably defended that. But it didn't bother me. It didn't bother her. She was very playful about it. But just to, I don't want other comedians to think that because something like that happened, or they're writing their jokes, that to be unfair if something like that happened. Don't. You write your joke and, you know, suffer the consequences of your joke, you know, in the sense that it's being funny or not funny. But don't write it because you think you're going to offend somebody. Do not write it because you think it's going to offend someone, because that's the worst thing you can do for comedy, for your comedy center, which Bill talks about, which I'll play one day in an excerpt. I have a lot of excerpts. So far, I've recorded every single one of the classes that we've had, and Bill's given me permission to play a lot of the footage. So it's just a matter of dissecting it and finding value that I can bring to you guys. But I know a lot of you guys are just kind of like, oh, come on, play this footage. I will, just let me explain a little bit more. Because I'm super excited for you to hear it too. We didn't go through my whole routine this week. We won't. I'll give you guys more footage of him breaking it down. If you're interested, send me messages. If not, then I'll just keep this stuff to myself. But I want people to say, I want people to gain a few things. Like, if I had major takeaways, really one, look at how not simple the process is, because that's the most important. The process is not simple at all. And when you realize that, then your approach towards it, like just going to an open mic or just pursuing it in general, or writing your own jokes, think about it. Look how much he breaks down, you know, these simple jokes that I put up there. And don't be afraid to over-exaggerate. You know, he's told me before that in the past he's actually asked his parents or friends or family if he could, like, tell a certain joke on stage, him meaning Bill. And most of them said yes. But there are times where people will get offended, you know. Me, I just don't care, because, like I said, it's comedy. If you look up on stage and think what I'm saying is really offensive and I really mean it, then I think you believe in the magic trick a little too much, you know. But it's real in the sense that the content came from me and those experiences came from me. But the joke has to be different. Like, I can't explain the conversation that I was having with my friend and why that was such a funny exchange for us. But in the moment, it was hilarious. And I laughed for a while. I thought it was a witty thing to say. But, you know, so I'm like, how could I make a room full of people say that? And they're not in the conversation, so they're not going to be able to pull the same, you know, comparisons that are quick and come to the same quick, witty, funny conclusions. So it's not going to be funny to them. So I have to change the circumstance of the joke. And that's where the humor is. And then you see how Bill changes the circumstance of the joke again. The next joke that I remember just vividly him diving into that it's going to be on the recording was the wife one, like I said. But that went well. Like, I tried, I took a shot at it. Because it's a funny joke, and it's not accurate, but I've thought it before, and it's funny, so I want to share it with you guys. And he realized what trick I was trying to use, because in stand-up there's different tricks that comics have up to their sleeve, and he says it right off the bat. He calls it. And that's why I like working with him, because when he talks, you can see that he knows what he's talking about. Like, it's wisdom. Like, if you guys don't know wisdom when you're listening to this, this is it. And this person, you can hear the age in his voice. And I'm not trying to say Bill is old, but Bill is old. Older. Joe, Bill is older. And he's old. I mean, but he's not, he's wise. He has this wisdom to him that if he tells you this is going to work in front of a room of 1,000 people, it's going to work in front of a room of 1,000 people. Believe it. And if it doesn't, it's because you didn't believe in it, or you didn't do it, or you didn't show up, or you got a little too drunk or whatever before the show. But it's not because Bill's advice is wrong. That man's advice is on point. And I saw it in my first show. It was crazy to see how impactful, like, just the switching up of a few words are, just removing a few words. But that's how on point you have to be, you know? So, all right. So without further ado, I'm going to play this. Listen to the part where he speaks about confidence, because even if you're not doing comedy, you can still relate to it. And then also I want you to listen to the part where he talks about my jokes. And tell me if you guys think, you know, give me a little bit of feedback. Like, did you guys laugh the first time you heard it, the round before he broke it down? I think we get into like 3 or 4 jokes maybe. And remember that if you guys want to hear more, just give me a message. If I get 5 messages, I'm putting the bar low. I'll play more of the breakdown of my jokes. But I'm not going to reveal my whole act. I don't think that's fair to you guys that are coming to the show. And I don't feel that's me who's preparing for the show. And I don't think that's really fair to Bill. Because he gets very personal when he's breaking these jokes down. I mean personal, very intimate. And he's just searching for words. And if you're listening to my podcast, I know that you're not someone that's easily offended. But I just want to make sure that Bill doesn't get caught in a thought train, because some of his thought trains get so crazy. But they have to come up with comedy, that you have to go off on these crazy swings, you know? So, all right, like I said, without further ado, I'm going to play it. The quality, I played it a couple times. The quality is pretty good. Listen close. And without further ado, here is Bill Keller. I had the Comedy Works, going over his class for stand-up comedy. Here's his footage.
You know, may break it down, but that comes with time and having done it a long time. But, yeah, always go up and try to give it your best. And it is harder. And you have to learn how to turn down what your expectations are. You know, if you're going, geez, if you're comparing each joke to the first show when there were big laughs and now you're getting little titters, it doesn't mean they're not enjoying it just as much as those other people did. It's just that there were ten times as many people. So, we had laughs instead of titters. So try to remember that also. And to go slow. I don't know if we, I think I probably mentioned this, so we should talk a little bit about performance, because it's coming up. It's a few weeks away, but it's close now. And the thing is, did we discuss confidence at all? I can tell you about how I remember, it's a very difficult thing to learn. And I remember one time, Jerry, and this is Seinfeld. This is really kind of, for me, it took a very long time to learn the confidence. I didn't know what is confidence. People say, you need more confidence on stage, you need more confidence on stage. And we had a softball team in the Broadway Show League. And I was a really good softball player when I was younger. So I really was. I was really very, very good. So, and it wasn't until Ron Richards one day said to me, he's talking about having more confidence. He says, you know how you feel when you're at third base? And I did. I could relate to how I felt at third base. He said, that's the kind of confidence you want to have on stage. That feeling that you have at third base is what you want to have on stage. So I usually like to let everybody know, it's something that we're all good at. I don't know what you're particularly good at, but whatever it is, you know, you know how you feel when you're doing that thing that you know you're good at? You just know it. And nobody can take it away from you. And everybody does have something. So whatever that something is, that feeling that you have when you're doing that thing that you know you can do better than anyone else, that's the kind of feeling you want to have when you're on stage. Okay? Now, everybody gets nervous, so don't be worried about being nervous on stage. That's a very normal thing to be. In fact, it's better to be nervous before you go on than not. Okay? Sometimes I don't feel nervous, and that then I get a little worried about how good I'm going to be that night, because it's like I'm not nervous. I should be a little nervous. Nerves are good. Now, the thing that you want to do that you have to remember is when you get up on stage, you want to slow down if something doesn't work. Okay? Don't go faster. The tendency for everyone is to speed up, talk faster, try to get to the next joke. Because you will find that when people laugh at your joke, it calms you down. It makes you feel better about yourself. It makes you feel a little more confident when you hear the laugh. And so when you don't hear the laugh, you want to get to the next joke as quickly as possible so that you get that laugh and it makes you feel calmer. But what happens is when you speed up, sometimes they don't hear you as well. Maybe you slur a word or two. Maybe the next joke isn't the joke that's going to pull it back out for you. And that's going to make you even more nervous because you didn't hear the laugh that you're hoping to hear. So what you need to do is be consciously aware of to stand there, deliver your line, hit the punchline. When you hit the punchline, if there's no reaction, just smile as if you'd gotten the reaction you wanted. I remember one of the first TV shows I ever did. It was a very small group, and I remember Mike Rowe had done it, the show, and we were at the Improv, and I had it coming up. And he told me, he said, there's no audience. It's just the camera crew, a couple of people that work on the show. So it's like six people there, and that's it. He said, so what you want to do is tell your joke, and then at the end where the laugh is, they fill in. They fill in the laughter, he said, afterwards. But so just stop. Smile like you got the laugh you want, and then move on. So just do it as if you had. So you have to pretend there's an audience that's laughing. Okay, and that's. Now you're gonna have more than six people there. Hopefully, we got 11 people in here, and if everybody brought 10 people, we'd have 110. Okay. The other thing I want to point out is that everyone will do well that night. But don't think it's because you've got 10 friends in the audience. Because if you got 10 friends in the audience, there's 100 people that don't know you. And 10 people laughing, well, it sounds like what it sounds like in here when we're sitting around doing this stuff. Okay? Maybe a little louder because we're hearing stuff for the second, third time sometimes. But so when you do well that night, it's going to be because you did a good job. It's going to reflect how hard you worked. Okay? It's not because you had 10 people that know you and like you in the audience. Because that's going to be outweighed by a lot more people that don't know you. Okay? So get that idea out of your head right now. That, you do well. It's because you worked hard and you did a good job. And that's the reason that you're going to do well. Or that's the reason why you did do well. All right? But remember to slow down. Just pause. And try to exude confidence. The Seinfeld story I was going to tell you is one time Jerry came into the comic strip and he said, Bill, I got some new stuff I'm going to try. I want you to come in and watch. And at first I thought he wanted me to watch because at one point I had given him more suggestions and ideas that he used in his act than anyone else. And I'm not saying that he didn't want me to see the new material, but he was going to do something that night that he also wanted me to see. And he went up on stage, and I sat in the back, and he started off with the new stuff instead of hitting him with a couple of things that he knew would work and then working in the new jokes, just how you normally would do it. And he just was doing one new thing after another. And none of it was working. And he just kept, and he just, but while he was on stage, he just exuded this confidence that said, I know I'm funny. And he held their attention. And after about 10 minutes of not saying anything funny, I noticed, my God, nobody's, what tends to happen is people will start to talk a little bit, you know. And remember, he wasn't famous. He wasn't anybody famous. They're not sniggling, oh, Jerry Seinfeld. They're just going, here's the next comic, all right? So, usually what happens when somebody's not funny on stage is you start to lose the audience. They start to talk amongst themselves a little bit. You know, and one table or two tables start to talk a little bit, and the other tables can't hear so well because they got that little chit chatter going on. They may not be able to make out what somebody's saying, but they hear it, and they're saying, this guy's not funny, and I can't really hear him now, and then they break down talking too. Maybe they're even saying, I wish this table would shut up, but they're not listening. They're talking, and tables will break down into little groups, you know. If you have an aggressive type of audience, somebody might shout something at you, whatever. But he just held that stage, and he said to the audience, just with his own, the way he stood, and the way he exuded his joy for what he was doing, and he kind of was just saying with body language, I know what I'm doing, yeah, I'm really funny, and I can make you laugh when I'm ready to make you laugh. But he held them. He held their attention. And they paid attention. They just, they, you know, because he just, you know, okay, you know, maybe didn't care for that one, but what about this? Hey, what do you think about this? And he held them the whole time. And he went a long time without doing any of his regular material or doing anything new that was funny. And then when he was ready, after about 15 minutes into a 20-minute set, then, of course, he started pulling out some really funny stuff and ended with a good set, because really what they remember the most is how it ends. You know, if you finish weak, you know, no matter how strong you are in the beginning or through the middle, if you finish weak, they'll go, oh, he was okay. Even though you had him rolling for 15 minutes, the last five didn't live up to the first 15. They go, oh, he was okay, you know. Whereas if that last five is way better than the first 15, they go, oh, he was really great, you know. So anyway, so we finished off, had a fine set, and then we talked about it afterwards. And he said, yeah, we talked about some of the new stuff, and he also said, I just wanted you to see. You see how I held him? Because he's trying to help me along with confidence on my own. So that's what you want to do, is you want to take that stage and just feel like you're the funniest person in the world and kind of exude that feeling from within, kind of send it out, do your joke. If it doesn't work, don't get small, don't go talking fast, slow down, make sure you deliver the next line properly so that they hear it with the right tempo. She was expecting me at 6 o'clock, and I showed up at 12. Figured it was all relative. Now, I don't know what figured it was all relative means, but...
Well, she was talking about dicks. Like...
It had been a long day. We'd shoveling at the beginning and shoveling at the end.
Yeah, that's too much.
And it was just an exhausting day. Tell you how exhausting it was. I actually couldn't get out of my chair, even though my wife had a Hallmark movie on.
Oh wow!
So you know I'm tired.
That's funny.
That usually sends me right out of the room. So, but no, I stayed. I watched the movie with her, and we went to bed.
I was able to punch out a lot of jokes.
So oh, and then this morning I had to go and do a thing for the food pantry in our church. Our church has a. It's actually an ecumenical food pantry, so it's like 8 churches and a synagogue.
Right.
But there was this craft fair going on. It goes on with several churches and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's connected. And we do a thing at our church that does, it's a fundraiser for the food pantry. And I couldn't get anybody to cover the morning hours, so I had to get there around 8:30. And I left at 10.
Oh, wow.
And so, but while I was sitting there, I was looking, it was funny because one of the things I was looking at was the porno bit. It seemed like,
Which one? I didn't see
it. Yeah, John has this thing about porno.
Oh, he did it last week.
The internet porno.
He read what he did last
week. Yeah, so we were... So I got yours, and I was looking at it on the way up, actually, while in the car, and I just had decided after the first page that I wasn't going to risk my life.
No, that's fine. But the good thing is that you got it.
Too old.
I came with a lot of stuff, though.
But it was. But I did do reading. I would stop the writing, but I did do. I did read a couple of extra pages just to let it roll around in my head a little bit. But I haven't looked at all of it. But this part here is actually to that.
Okay.
But that's what happens
when you drive it. Okay. I couldn't wait for you to dive into this.
All right. So. Well, this first one, this girl told me to come to her house at 6 o'clock.
I do hear that, right?
Yeah. When I get there, she said she was expecting me at 6 o'clock, and I showed up at 12. Figured it was all relative. Now, I don't know what figured it was all relative means.
Well, she was talking about dicks, and I was talking about, I thought she was talking about my dick. So that's why I showed up at 12, my dick is 12 inches long.
Well, I was thinking 12 because what time would Dick's O'Clock look like if you had Dick's O'Clock? And it would be with both hands straight up. So...
I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the problem, you know, comedy can be illogical, but it has to make sense.
It does, yeah.
And...
That doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, it's... I remember Paul Reiser had a bit about... ices, and he liked this ice and that kind of ice, and you know, cherry ice and lemon ice. And he says they have blue ice because he's talking about red ice.
Yeah.
And he says they have blue ice. He says what's blue? And it just never really worked because it doesn't make sense because
ice is blue.
You figure it's blueberry.
Yeah.
That's what the audience. Because the audience, you got to think. You know, how's the audience? The audience is sitting there. He's talking about ices, and red is cherry, and white is lemon. What's blue? There's no blue...
Fruit,
he was saying. And it's like, no, there's blueberry, Paul. And people are figuring that out. People are going, blueberry. And that's why it's not working.
Got it.
What he was doing was he was trying to force the joke. You see, he's trying to force a joke where there is no joke.
Got it.
Because it doesn't make any sense. So, anyway, and I think you're kind of doing that with Dick's O'Clock.
You are, I am.
You know, why would you ever think she said Dick's O'Clock?
Because it was a typo.
But,
you're right.
So, but I was thinking that you said, well, you said, I wanted you at 6 o'clock. It's 12 now. And you're saying to her, well, she says, I thought it was Dick's O'Clock. She says, what's Dick's O'Clock? He says, when the little hand is on the big hand and it's straight up.
That's awesome.
Okay, so, I mean, I tried to go on with something.
Who's he reading?
Me.
That's what I thought. Okay, good.
Yeah. So, but that was my thought.
That's an awesome one. That's an awesome one.
I don't know.
Well, big hand and it's straight up.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait to say that one.
Well, I'm not sure that...
Oh, I am.
Okay, anyway. What was something else that I made a comment on? Okay, here's what you wrote. I can't say that I hate her. Hate is a strong word. More like fucking hate. That's better, much stronger. Talking about his ex-wife. I think what you want to do is just try and mislead them a little bit more. I can't say that I hate her. Hate is a strong word. I should say fucking hate. That's more accurate. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to give them more of a mislead.
So. Then you have this thing about glasses. Okay, but here's what you're old. I'm getting older. Always wore glasses, but recently started wearing progressive lenses. The glasses with the two lenses. You see far up top and see close to on the bottom. So it's hard to gauge distance, and it takes time and practice. Okay? But I'm just thinking, when you said progressive lenses, do you mean, you don't mean bifocals, do you? Because they do, that's also two lenses.
I thought that...
You just described bifocals. That's not progressive.
Okay. I got to switch to the bifocals.
Bifocals is a kind of hard line, progressive,
right.
Is a soft.
My wife, yeah, because that's what I thought, but
okay.
I didn't know if you were what you were describing.
Okay, so it's bifocals.
My wife has the progressive lenses where it's kind of melded in and you don't see the line.
Okay, then it's bifocals.
But you were saying on the top you see far and on the bottom you see far. Anyways, but what I thought was, if you're going to do something like this at all, was that I'm getting older. I always wore, you said I'm getting older, always wore glasses. But you say, don't say I'm getting older. Just say, I always wore glasses. You don't have to tell them, I'm getting older.
Okay.
I used to wear glasses, now I'm wearing new. To get right to the joke.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, never bring up age unless you're going to use it somehow.
Okay.
All right? Because you don't want to tell people you're old anyway. I mean, the younger people are going to be looking at you as like, oh, he's a little older than I am anyway.
Got it.
But just say I always wore glasses. Recently, I got progressive lenses.
Okay. Bifocals.
Or bifocals,
yep.
Whichever one. I don't know which one you have. Oh, you wearing them now?
No.
Just looking to see if I can find a line or not. Okay, anyways, you see far. Okay. You can see far on the top. The top part, you see far, and on the bottom, you see close. And in the middle, you can't see shit.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of. But, when you have, you go on the top and the bottom, and then what's in the middle? And it's like, so on the top, I see far, on the bottom, I see long, and in the middle, I see shit. Okay, so. So that's really all that I,
Say something like, really focused on people's head to the feet.
Everybody looks like they've been squashed. A hat on top of their shoes. You can mention about funhouse mirrors. Okay, so there was some other things, but okay. And so, let's move forward with Rick. Well, you know what? We're
going to
leave Rick for last, as I recall, and we're
going to... All right, so I got a lot from that. Even just listening to it over again, I pulled a lot of more information out of that. It probably doesn't seem like that to you guys. How could you pull more? It was pretty straightforward, but just some of the focal points in the jokes, and just the fillers to make the joke work. Everybody that writes stories or tells jokes knows that every joke and every story has a beginning, middle, end, and I always try to do that. And I kind of struggle with the one-liners, how to get that all in real quick. Like the wife joke, hates a strong word. Like it's a lot to pump in there, because honestly, if you don't listen to the rest of my act, then you don't know who I'm talking about when I say hate her. And if you don't know who that her is, then it throws off the whole joke. So I have to make sure that joke is placed properly within the order of the jokes so that it tells it the right story, So that's why when Bill's read it off, he kind of said, it's his ex-wife. It's to the people that were in there were like eight other people there. So he wanted to make sure that they were able to understand the premise of the joke, which if they would have known that before, it would have been funnier when it hit. So just little observations like that. And the bifocal, I'm still thinking what that change if that change in the words is really going to make that much of a difference, and I think it will. I just don't like the word that they want me to use. Not the word that they want me to use, but the actual what it's called. But I just think I think progressive lens is a little sexier than bifocals. It just slows me down, and progressive like rolls off the tongue a little faster and is smoother. I really don't like bifocals. I think there's going to be more people in the audience that understand progressive because of the nature of the word, just the simple, if you don't know anything, like, you know, progressive assumes exactly what I'm saying. This goes from far to close. You know, there's a progressive change there as opposed to just bifocals. I feel like you're focusing into something. So that was a very purposeful change of words when I wrote the joke originally. You saw me kind of dummy up when Bill was explaining it. But it's important for me to do that because I want Bill to give me all of his open thoughts on what will make the joke work. You know, there's this class, I haven't seen it yet. Last class, we had a lot of people that wanted to challenge Bill and what his knowledge was and what he knew and what he thought about what worked and what didn't work. And it really slowed down the class. And we had like 16 people there, so it made it worse. This class, we only have 11 people, and mainly only 8 people are active at a time per any given class. So he's able to give a lot of individual attention. And I want to take advantage of that and kind of seep up any of the extra attention that he's giving. So I'm not going to block any of that thought with my stupid thoughts. If you notice when he's talking, I just say, okay, because I'm just taking it in because I know how much value is there. And I only have 3 more weeks, maybe. I mean, realistically, yeah, 3 more weeks of him really coaching me through these jokes. And it's not just these jokes. What he's teaching me now is going to follow me through with the rest of the jokes that I write, continuously moving forward. So I hope you guys got a lot from that. I know for new comics that are coming up, to have someone like that, that caliber of a writer looking at jokes and just seeing his mindset and how analytical he is. I mean, next week, like I said, people reach out to me and let me know they want more. I'm going to make sure that I get a bigger chunk. I'll even whisper something in his ear for him to kind of tune it up a little bit more. And what I mean by tune it up is just get a little bit more descriptive in when he's breaking down the jokes. And we don't have to necessarily use my jokes because I can ask some of the guys if they mind me using some of the work that he's done with them on here. But that's just if there's interest. I mean, I don't want to burn up the airway with this type of content if people aren't observing it. But if there's literally one person that says, hey, that really did help me, you know, put more. I'm going to put more because I like listening to it. It's educational, and he's just an inspiring person. So enough of that. And I have to give this announcement, and I'm going to know when people are listening to this. The date of the show is changed. It's December 6th, which is a Thursday. So it's moving from that Sunday into a Thursday. So it's December 6th. So please mark your calendars. Yeah, we're going to be able to have more people. We might have 2 shows that run. The first show is going to be at 7 o'clock, and that's it. So I have to update that on my Facebook, so be aware of that. And I think that's everything I'm going to talk about for comedy now. I mean, everything's coming along very well. I do have a very strong base of jokes that I want to use, but I'm going to be adding to that. I'm going to have a pool of at least 70 jokes, which is a ridiculous amount of content to have, which is dope. The reason I have it is because, like I said, right, working in Bill's class, doing my morning pages, and just really trying to take this thing serious. I don't want to go up there and, you know, not do my thing. So, just putting in the work. I know how that works. So the next part of the show, and I'm not saying like I'm breaking it down into different parts, but they're kind of separate because the mode is going to change a little bit. And it's a really important. It's really important, this part, because I know that there's people out there that are going to connect with it because we all deal with it. And in Sandler training, you guys are going to hear me mention a lot about Sandler training because it's been very impactful on me as an individual, as a professional, and as a successful professional. And I think there's a lot of times that, you know, when you go to work, there's a role that you become. And then there's when you're walking around, there's an identity that you have. And it's very important that you separate those things. And a lot of times, head trash will get you to kind of misinterpret the value of certain things, the value of certain perspectives that you may have on yourself. So it's important that we learn and understand what head trash is and how to break it down. Sometimes you get to a point in life where you are in uncharted territory, so to speak, and the stakes are a little bit higher than you expect them to be. And that's not a bad thing. You want to play the game, or you want to be in that situation for the opportunity to grow, but you might not have all the tools that you need to make it happen. So what happens is, what I've learned and what's worked for me and what I've talked about when I was going after that record is having a coach. And there's different types of coaches. The coach I'm talking about is a life coach. So I've been spending like the last 3 to 4 months just kind of meeting with different life coaches, looking at different perspectives that they have, and trying to figure out which one is the right fit for me, because I know that I need one because of the things that I'm trying to get involved. You know, this podcast means a lot to me. It's been a very, 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 very successful so far in many events. Eventually, I want to get into, well, I'm already into comedy. I'm only 8 months into comedy now, but I really want that to be a big thing. And plus, I want to be successful in my profession that I want. You know, business development is a passion. I went to college for it, and it's definitely a passion, so I want to be successful there. But you can understand how those three different things can be very taxing and very difficult and very stressful. And then all those other things, I want to also be able to balance in having a fun life, to have content to talk about on the podcast. And I want to do jiu-jitsu. I want to train that. And I also want to balance just like a healthy self. And I want to be performing at my best and while I'm doing all of those things. And they said that the person that I actually spoke with was a very, very good coach. It was one of the better meetings that I've had out of probably the 10 that I've had. And what was amazing about her was just that her ability to kind of just tap into what was going on, what was really going on, not just what was put on face value. And just let me realize, you know, the things that I'm feeling are natural and they're going to be there no matter what. And it's a matter of, and those feelings I'm talking about is the head trash. So what is a life coach? A life coach, people think are therapists. They think are people that you go to and they just give you a list of tasks to do when you leave. Next week, follow up and you make sure they call you up and they tell you, this is what you should have did. Why didn't you do what I told you to do? And that's not what a life coach is. When it comes to therapy, therapy is about the past. When it comes to life coach, life coaching is about the future. That's the best way to break it down. And the reason why people would need a life coach, and it's a good reason, one, is because it's just better to have an extra set of eyes on what you're doing, on your performance. Life coaches can see, coaches in general, not just life coaches, coaches in general can see when you're performing at a level that's not your best. They see it from a different perspective. They understand what your best is, and they understand what your worst is, and they understand how to get you there from a physical aspect, and they understand how to maintain you there from a mental aspect. So they're very important. And that's why, you know, Michael Jordan has a coach on the Bulls. He's not just out there running around calling plays by themselves. You know, the Bulls just don't walk out and say, all right, let's go get these guys and I'll run around. There's a coach, and the coach keeps them doing the things that they don't want to do and keeps them in tack when they start to fall apart, when the game starts to go wrong, when you've seen, how many times have you seen teams that are on the verge of losing, all of a sudden they go in the locker room, they hear their coach talking on their comeback and they kick ass. You know, you see it on football all the time. You see it in basketball all the time. You see it in baseball all the time. And that's because of these coaches. And the thing with a coach is that coach doesn't have to be able to beat you in that. Like, you're not going to see coaches like Michael Jordan's coach squaring him off and beating him. You know what I mean? Dunking on him. It's not. But there's that opportunity for you to download superior knowledge. That's what it's called. When you're downloading superior knowledge, and that superior knowledge coming from a superior place, is always going to enhance your performance. And really good coaches know how to tune that information or dial that into, so it's very, very unique and custom to you and your scenario and your situation. And that's why I'm getting to the point where I need someone to do that with me, because of the level of where I'm going, where I want to go. And down the road, life coaching could be something that I want to do, because I feel that life coaching is something that it changes people. It changes people. And what happens is it changes them to the point where they're just performing at a much, much higher level, way, way higher level. And they're performing more consistently and less stressed out. And why is that stress thing most important? the stressing is what burns you out. And burning, when you're burnt out, you can't perform the way that you need to. And you need to be able to get that stress and manage it, because it's going to be there. It's just like excess of, it's a waste. It's a waste of product of just being life, you know, stress. That's, it's a waste, like just the way it's going to be there. So, it's called the success paradox, and it means, well, it doesn't mean, I guess it's just, it says that the more successful you get, the more stress you have to deal with. And I agree with that. I think Biggie agreed with it. We said more power, the more money, more problems, right? And you know, if someone takes you outside and hangs you up upside down from a 1 foot high ladder, you're not really going to be scared, right? Well, that doesn't mean 1 foot high ladder. You know what I'm talking about. Like, they take you off a balcony, you're not that far off the ground. Stop it. 1 foot. Okay. I fixed it. Cut it out. But if they take you up on the highest floor, the 20th floor, and hang you over, you're going to be a lot higher. You're going to be a lot more worried and scared because of the risk. The risk is there. It's a much higher risk, you know? So it's the same thing. Like, when I have such an amazing audience that's so supportive, and they're listening to me and they're understanding me and they want more content, they're coming out, they're reaching out to me, that risk is bigger. You know, it's not that one person that I was asking for originally. It's all the people that I need, you know, people that come and subscribe, the people that are listening to this as soon as they see that there's an update and there's a new opportunity to listen to Mr. Milton Young drop knowledge. You guys, that was loud. I apologize. That was even louder. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing. I'm dropping knowledge for you guys, and you guys are picking it up. And getting into this, so why did I decide to get the life coach? Like, why was it this? I think everything just lined up very lucky for me. And I just met them. I met her at the right time. I don't know if this is necessarily going to be the right coach for me, but I think it might be. And I'm very happy about that, because it's a long process. And, you know, with anything, it's important for you guys to have friends that you can rely on and friends that you can trust. And because two minds are better than one, you know. And when you have a coach that's that second mind, then yours working to solve a problem, you can get it done much faster, much more efficiently. And then all of her wisdom, too, as well, is going to play a big role in that. So I'm excited to see what happens, you know. So what is she going to be doing? What's the purpose of what she's going to be doing? She's going to be helping me moderate fear, moderate my tasks, make sure that I stay on task, identify areas that I can improve in, identify areas that I struggle in, and then identify areas that I'm not even aware of. It's important that I know that these areas exist, but maybe I'm not tackling them because I don't know how bad they are, just because of the perspective I have. You know, when you're in something versus viewing something, it's two different worlds, right? So that additional perspective can be changed. It can change everything. Just like a baseball coach, they teach you how to hold the bat. Just choking up a little bit more on the bat can change everything. It can change the whole trajectory of that experience, that, you know. Same thing with golf. You move your hip this way, or you move your shoulder this way, or you move your foot that way, an inch this way, an inch that way, and it changes everything. So it's the same thing with having a coach. Just those fine tunings make a huge, huge difference. And I knew it was going to be a good conversation because when she asked me what I wanted to work on, I thought to myself, okay, so I've met with a few coaches now. Man, I want to give this a shot to see how good this one really is. Because they're not cheap. These coaches are not cheap. They're very expensive. And when I say expensive, I mean expensive kind of alludes to the idea that it's, you're paying too much. I've always figured that way. With sales, I mean, being in sales, I look at that word a little differently than everybody else. I think whenever someone says, oh, it's too expensive, that means I'm not willing to pay that much. That's basically what that means. And so I'm not saying a life coach is too expensive. I'm saying that they cost a lot because, like I said, the difference that they make is worth that difference that you're going to pay. You know, if you pay someone, let's say, 10 grand for 6 months of help, visiting them, you know, twice a week for an hour. This person's bringing a lot of value to you. And then you're going from making $110,000 a year to, you know, $150,000, then it's worth it. You still made it. After you pay back the expense of having that person in your life, you still made it a huge profit. So that's how you have to look at things when you have the right mentality and when you're trying to get to the next level. Don't look at what it costs. Look at what it's gonna make you, the return on your investment, you know? And I think this is going to be a huge return on my investment. And it came in a really good time because I was dealing with something, which is strange. I'm just going to keep it real with you guys because that's what you guys like, right? So shout out to Aiden. I haven't met Aiden yet, but we know all of each other. And he's a young guy. He reminds me of myself. Going through a lot of change. I went through a lot of change too, and I'm going through a lot of change now. And I guess Aiden was curious if Milton had ever cried or if he does cry. And I'm going to say, hell nah, I don't cry. I'm Milton Young. What you mean, do I cry? And then I'm going to be real with you and say, yes, I do. I have. It was a big thing for me for the longest time because, you know, men, boys, all that, you don't want to cry. You're taught not to cry. And you're taught that if you do, you're not a man. And you're taught that if you do, you're weak. Who's teaching me? Society. You know, your friends. You know, even little girls nowadays, they don't want to cry. Because they get judged. You know, so, yeah, do I have fears? For the longest time, I used to tell myself that I didn't have any fears. And then recently, I found out that I have a very big fear. And I do cry. I've cried recently. And I'm very in tune when I realize that certain people come into your life for a certain reason. And this person, this life coach, came into my life and made me realize what I'm afraid of. Because when everyone asks me, what are you afraid of with jujitsu and all that stuff, I'm like, I ain't afraid of nine. You mean afraid of, come on, afraid, listen. I don't use that voice, but that's kind of what I do. I'm not afraid of, there's nothing that really scares me or I didn't think, but what I realize and what makes me cry is the fear of failure. It terrifies me. And I've always been terrified of failing because I'm one of those people that when you say it can't be done, it's the first thing I want to do is do it because it's going to be the most memorable thing. And I want to be memorable. That's how I've always worked. That's how I want to work. That's how I'm going to continue to work. And I never really failed at anything because of that fear, you know? I mean, you have disappointments, but there's a difference than it being failure. And through talking to this person, I was able to realize that's my biggest fear. And when did I cry? All right, so the other day, I was driving from work, and I was driving to work, and I started thinking about all the episodes I needed to do, and I started thinking about the comedy show and how many people are going to be coming out, and, you know, the jokes, I was struggling to get them up, the jokes. At that point, I didn't have 45 jokes. I only had, like, 10 jokes, and I've been writing and writing and writing. They're doing my morning pages, and it just wasn't, nothing was coming to me the way that it should come to me. I didn't feel as confident as I should feel. So I got overwhelmed. I want to say that I had a little nervous breakdown, but it wasn't. It was a little more than that. It was like pressure, right? So I stopped the car and I started crying. It's weird, right? Big ass black dude like me pulled over the kind of car crying. But I had to because I lost a little bit of control. And it's hard for me to admit how hard I was crying, but it was weird because I just stopped for a second and started thinking about it. Like, what the hell is going on with you, dog? People can see you. There's traffic. But I didn't really care about that, if I'm being honest with you. But it's just, I didn't understand what was going on because it was the first time that it happened in a long time. And with everything gone on before, with the divorce and losing my job in the past, like, I've never really reacted like that to anything. So this was different for me. And then I have this opportunity to meet with this life coach. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to tell her this is what's going on and see how she reacts to it. Let's have a real session. If, you know, I'm going to think about doing this, this is the type of thing she's going to have to do for me. So let's see how she does. And guess what? She knocked it out of the park. She knocked it out of the park, because when I was sitting there and I was crying, it didn't make any sense to me, because a lot of the thoughts that were coming through my head didn't line up with my actions or my activities, right? I was terrified about the podcast not being a huge, tremendous, successful success. And maybe it's not huge, but it's a success. And I'm very happy with it. And the audience that I have, guys, I'm going to tell you this right now. If I could trade Joe Rogan and have his millions of viewers that he has, or have the audience that I have that reaches out to me and lets me know how great my episodes are and sends me pictures of my episode playing on their radio, or just sends me a shout out on Instagram, or just texts me, say it was good. That's it. That makes my day. That right there makes my day. I would not trade my audience, because you guys are the best, and I know I'm going to grow because I got you guys out there telling people about me. I don't even care if you tell anybody about me. Honestly, as long as you're listening, that's what matters to me. That's the most important thing. And I'm thinking here, wondering, how am I so stressed out over this, and it's already being doing such a good job? And the comedy, why am I afraid of this comedy thing? Like, why am I crying as a result? I'm not afraid of comedy. And it's because I didn't want to fail again. I don't want to go up there and fail. I don't want to go up there and forget my words. But, you know, when I was preparing for that comedy show last time, there was no way I was going to forget my words. You know, when I had one of my best friends, Anthony Constantino, working with me, every night we were standing up, he would call me. This dude would call me in the middle of the night. And when I say middle, like 1 o'clock, because he was up going through his bit, and he would call me on FaceTime and have me get up out of bed and go through my whole act with him. And he would go, that's after me watching him go through his act 5 times. So guess what? You know what happened on the day of the show? I'll tell you what didn't happen. We didn't make a mistake. I'll tell you what didn't happen. Us making a mistake. So why was I so caught up in that moment? Why was I crying? Someone that goes around talking about he's not afraid of anything, does jujitsu, 213-pound, little diet reference there. But why was I feeling that? And I talked to her, and she gave me a good idea. She told me that it's because thoughts are energy, and energy passes through us. And she said that we can't be our thoughts because we create our thoughts. So you can't be what you create, because they're two different things. And that was amazing, because it's very true. It's extremely true. One of the most powerful things she said to me during the call was that we are spiritual beings having human experiences, and part of those human experiences are thought. And thoughts are energy, and they just need to pass through you. And what we have to do is we have to learn how to control those thoughts by just watching them pass. Like looking out your window and watching cars pass. Those are your thoughts. Instead of stopping the car, getting into it, and then driving off thinking that you're that car. Because you're not. That doubt's going to come. So let's go back to why and what I should have done when I was crying, right? I should capture those different cars. All right, what's impacting me the most? It's comedy and the fear of the podcast, right? Just watch and be aware. Okay, well, there's fear there. Why? Well, maybe you're not putting out enough podcasts, or maybe the guests aren't dope enough. Nope, that's not true. So why is the fear there? Oh, because it's so important to you, and you have such an amazing audience that you don't want to let anybody down. So be aware of that. And keep doing what you're doing. That car gone through the door. The second one, comedy. Are you afraid that you're not funny? No, you've been funny ever since you were born. So you're not worried about that. Are you afraid that you're going to forget your jokes? Yeah, you could forget your jokes, but you're funny enough to pull that off. You've forgotten enough of things. So you forget the time if you don't have your watch on. So, and this is me talking to myself, people. This is weird, but follow along, because you're going to be doing this with yourself, you know? So I went through that, and I said, well, you know, are you worried that you're going to forget your joke? Well, yeah, I might forget my joke, but I'll have 70 to pick from. So if I get one, I'll replace it. But I'm going to be up there for my full 8 minutes. Granted, Bill decides to give me that full 8 minutes. But don't stress about it, because if it's five, I'm going to kill in that five. And if it's eight, I'm going to kill in that eight. If someone doesn't show up and I got to go 10, I'm going to be prepared to go to 10. So what is this thought? Oh, it's just another car. Let it pass. That's how I should have handled it. Because we are conditioned throughout life, right? She called it neurotransmitters. We're all set up differently, you know? Like, you respond differently to failure than I respond differently to failure, and he responds differently to failure. And certain failures, they leave a bigger impact on certain people. You just have to be able to control those things and realize that, you know, you're going to fail. I told her that I was struggling with these thoughts, and she said that's perfectly fine. She struggles with thoughts too. But I have to struggle with the thoughts and not become the thought and not give that thought more reality. It's just like when you're a kid and you think there's a monster in the closet, right? It's there because you put it there. But realistically, there's no monster in that closet. I was watching a TV show, and it was about, I think it might have been Jerry Springer. And they brought out a box of spiders. And they were working with people that had these different, you know, they were scared of certain things. And they brought out this box of spiders, and they told these people to put their hands in the spiders. And as soon, no one saw the spider. All they did was they saw the box. And guess what? They started going crazy. They started running all over the place screaming. And guess what? You already know where I'm going with this. There was no boxes in the spider. Wow. There were no spiders in the box. All right, I can't wait for the emails on that one and the text messages on that one. Great. All right, let's just let that go and keep it moving. All right. So you get the point. There was a gem there. It's going to be burned into your memory. And let's keep it moving. Where was I? Neurotransmitters. Me being afraid of failure. Whatever. Or making mistakes. Who cares? It's funny stuff. But yeah, listen. So those thoughts that are running through my head that were, you know, stopping me from moving forward, progressing, they're in your head too. But they're just thoughts. They're not real. You know, and if you can't start believing in illusions, because then it just throws off what reality is. And then when you see reality, you won't know it because you're just stuck in this illusion. And, you know, yeah. When you become, when you start going after what you want, you're going to see a lot of illusions. And a lot of those illusions are telling you to stop. There's signs that pop up that looks like, you know, you should stop. There's people that jump in your way that tell you that you should stop. There's really good reasons, you know, that you should stop. And you shouldn't. You got to keep moving forward, you know. Prime example, there's this guy in the class named Rick. And I don't want to call him by his first name. And if you watch this, if you're in the class, Rick, then yeah, you're listening to this. And if you're not, well, you should be. But I think Rick is very talented. I think that Rick has a tremendous amount of potential because he can do all these little voices. And he kind of gets lost in these characters that he creates. But I think, I don't think that he's going to, because he's going to get distracted. And he's going to listen to one of those illusions. And those illusions can come in many forms. They can be staying after work late, you know, having to take care of tenants, you know, having a family to take care of. They're illusions in the fact that those are all real things, but they are not in your way. When they're not in his way, you know, sometimes he'll come to class and say that he didn't write. I'm not calling him out. Like, yo, Mel, what the dog, Mel, what you do calling Rick out? I'm not calling Rick out. I'm just using Rick as an example. And I don't think Rick cares, because I'm giving him a compliment, a very high compliment, because I'm funny. And I know funny when I see it. But when you have people that are letting illusions impact their potential, it's just disappointing. And I'm using him as an example for my audience and my viewers, or whatever you guys want to call yourselves, the coolest people in the world, can make that see it and not use that as an example and make sure that it doesn't impact them the same way. And not make up excuses as to why you're not doing something that you love and you're good at and you're probably exceptional at, you know? I've seen so many people that are so talented in comedy since I've started in these last 6 months that I know aren't going to go anywhere with it because they have all of these illusions in their way. And I just don't want anybody out here that's got anything that they're going after, a purple belt, a blue belt, a white belt, some kind of, you know, PR, you know, and some type of business endeavor. You know, Sherman came to me and told me he wants to do a podcast. Sherman, do that podcast. And I wish you all the best. And any advice that I can give you, I'm going to give it to you. But the biggest is do not let illusions get in your way with anything that you're doing. So that's just that. And then she was also telling me that, you know, to avoid, to give you a few more gems before I let you guys go. And if you want more of this, I'll let you know. I got pages of this stuff written down from the conversation that I had. But I'm just going to give you a few more gems and then I'm going to let you go. So she told me that, you know, can't believe in these illusions. And that when you start doing things that are bothering you, for example, you know, the comedy for me, or the podcast, when I'm here in the studio and I'm recording and I'm looking over and I see that red light going and I'm looking down at my notes and I'm looking up at the time, I'm just vibing, like everything goes good. It all makes sense, right? But it's when I'm away from it, I'm wondering what's the next episode going to be like, what am I going to do, this. I'm just thinking about it. She used a really good example, and it was the example about me being in the zone. And it was awesome because she said, that's what you should be doing. Just like what Bill, I don't know if I gave you that piece of Bill saying, you know, you should, when you're up there, you should just be clicking. And when you're in the zone, that's what you're doing. You're clicking. You're not doing any thinking. You're just reacting. And sometimes you're so in the zone, everything just slows down and you can just step back and you see yourself from a different light and a different perspective. And you're just watching yourself perform. That's how it should feel all the time. There shouldn't be any stress involved in the process because you should just feel that. And when, you know, when you're up until like think about anything that you guys like doing or things that stress you out. Up until when you start doing it, you're stressed out. If it's work for school, work for college, work for work, you're thinking about, okay, I'm going to put that bid together. I'm going to put this email together. How am I going to write this transcript? And then when you start doing it, it's not that bad. And then you get done, you're like, whoa, okay, you know? So that's what it is. It's a matter of like, as soon as you start get those doubts in your head, start doing whatever you're telling yourself you can't do. Even the workouts. I know a lot of people that listen to this workout. So even your workout, when you know you're going in there and you're going to do a squat workout or do, you know, arms, something that you don't like doing, and then you get into it and you actually do it, it's not that bad when you're doing it. It's more the thought, just the thought like of having the monster in the closet, that you never, ever see. But when you're young, or a monster in the closet can be symbolic to a lot of different people that are older, you know, a certain boss that you don't like to deal with, a certain, you know, instructor or person you don't want to roll with, or there's a certain audience that you don't want to do stand up in front of. There's so many different things that you can apply that to. And then once you're doing it, it doesn't end up being that bad, you know? So just keep that in mind. And also remember that in thoughts, they're not relative to the situation. And what I mean by that is when I was running that race and I was running that perfect race, there were 8 other people in that race. Do you think they were running the perfect race? Do you think they had the same thoughts that I had? No. No, not at all. And the value in that is saying is that, see, even a better example would be the World Series, where half the people there are happy about the game, and the other half are pissed off about the game. And it's because their perspective is completely different. They're seeing it from a different perspective. And depending on what perspective they decide, you know, one person in that race is like, this is the best race of my life. Another person inside of that race is like, this is the worst of my race of my life. Another person is like, damn, I'm going to lose this, but I'm getting closer to beating him. Another person is like, damn, this dude is unbelievable. I'm never going to race again. I'm switching to go play chess. You know, but all those people are in that same second, in that same moment, and they're all thinking something different. And they're all right and they're all wrong, right? Because the person that's saying this is the worst race ever, I can tell him that he's wrong because it's the best race ever. And he can tell me I'm wrong. You see how that works? It's a mental game. But it's if you stay on the positive side of that, you always win. There's an advantage there. So you got to find a way to stay on that mental, get that mental edge from that situation. And that's what a coach helps you do. And they help you stay on that edge. And if you start to lose or starts to slip and you don't realize it because you don't see it in your performance, they see it in your performance. And they make sure that you get to that next level. And I've always been blessed to have some amazing people in my life that are able to do that. And I've been able to identify how amazing they are because I'm just that damn good. No, I'm just lucky. I'm just lucky that I have in my life. Seriously, I'm just lucky that these people come along and they take the time to just guide me along with little things, you know. Sometimes I don't even realize. I don't ever go knocking on everybody's shoulder and I don't go knocking around at everybody's doors and calling everybody up and texting everybody and telling them how amazing they are. Maybe I should, because compliments go a long way, but I'm just smart enough to pick up on something that's brilliant. And you guys should be too, you know. There's people in your life that are there for a reason. They might even be there for a very short period of time, but they're there. And if you just take a second to just really, you know, take it in sometimes, you'd be surprised at what you find. And I'm very, very surprised at what I find. I'm very lucky at what I found with a lot of these people. So, and this person, and the reason I want to tell her name is just because professionally I don't think it's right. Yeah, you know what I mean? She's not officially my coach yet. So, but yeah, I have a lot more, but I'm going to save it for another episode. This episode got a little bit longer than I wanted to be. I wanted to be just about the comedy and then a little bit about the life coaching, but then I just started diving into some of this stuff and I wanted to share it to you, you know? But the last thing I'll say to you guys before I leave is, remember, your 100% of what you feel is a result of your thoughts. So if you can control your thoughts, you control how you feel. And if you control how you feel, then you control your thoughts. And that sounds really simple and really, really dorky, but it's very, very important. It's critical. Mission critical. And I think that if you can master that, then it's kind of like mastering yourself, you know, because you are what you think. So, all right. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing. Spread the word, guys. I'm going to have another podcast up at the end of this week. You guys won't be hearing much. There will be interviews been going on this week, but I won't be. These next few weeks are going to be pretty quiet for me. I am going to be recording, so I'm going to plan on hitting you guys with a lot of content. But this might be a while. I might be switching back over to one episode a week. You will hear from me at least once a week. I promise that. You know, at least once a week. And when I can get those bonuses, then I'll get them in. But right now, in preparation for the show, I really got to start focusing on memorizing my act, sharpening some of these jokes, coming up with something. This show, I want some really, I don't know. I mean, I can't make any big promises in terms of, you know, my acting in this. This stand-up show for me is really just learning the basics. If I were to name the show, for me, I wouldn't name it a graduation show. I'd name it Back to the Basics, because I'm just going back and just really polishing the tools that Bill gave me that are going to follow me through the rest of my career. On how to write a joke, the mechanics of jokes, the tricks of jokes, callbacks, the basics. I just want to go back and really try to get a firm grasp of that. So I'm not going to be doing a lot of physical comedy. That's going to be down the road when I'm really confident up there, when I really know this stuff. You know, I have no problem going up there and being silly, but not for the people that are coming out on December 6th. And that is the official date, guys. But I just want to give these, anybody that's coming out, a solid show. You know, we got some really good acts. Shafi has won Clash of the Comedians twice. He's going to be up. He might even have 8 minutes. I hope he does. And if there's someone that should have 8 minutes, guess who it is? It's not me. It's Shafi. Why do I think that? Because he's put the time in. Shafi's been doing this for about a year and a half now. I've been doing it for 8 months. He's good, solid comedian. I really like his style. He's still growing into himself, and if you come to the show, you'll see it. But when you also see it's a comic that has a lot of potential. I like watching him because he takes it serious. He's not somebody that's going to go home, tell you he's going to write, tell you he's going to make the time or thinking about making the time, then come in class and give you all these excuses as to why he couldn't do it. Shafi shows up. You know that he's got jokes with him. You know that he's prepared. It's memorized. He's going to do it. He's going to get up on stage and he's going to perform. And I expect that for him on the day of the show. The other people in the class, you have Chris Pickett. You know, listen, my man Chris, he's going to do a great job too. Casey, I don't even know what his last. I know what his last name is, but Dizzy Enzio or whatever. Sorry, Casey. Everyone messes up, bro. I'm sorry, but still give you the shout out. Casey is a talented, very very talented comic as well. I enjoy watching both Chris and Casey because they emulate what every comic should be. They really do. These two kids. And I'm not calling them kids in a disrespectful form. I'm calling them kids because they really are kids when it comes to comedy. And I'm jealous of that because they're so young and they're so raw that they have the energy and perspective of a little kid that is trying to learn something in art school, right? He's going to do whatever he wants, whatever colors go with whatever colors. He's not going to stay within the lines. It's just going to be some stuff. And when I say that they approach it that way, I mean from a creative standpoint. But don't think they're just going up there and winging it. They put their work in. They put their time in. They came into the scene very late in terms of the scene's been going for a while. But early in the terms of these guys have just been doing this for like, what, 6, maybe 5 months. And they already have their own open mic that they do. It's not really the sense of a traditional open mic. They have acts that I would call them showcases. These guys are doing a great job. And they're not afraid to go up there and make a fool of themselves. They show up every week for the open mics, multiple open mics. They'll drive 2 hours just to get stage time because they know how important stage time is for a new mic, for a new comic. And they listen. You know, a lot of kids coming up, guys, men, whatever, women, girls, gals, bros, they don't listen. And these guys listen. And you see it in how they move. And I'm really proud to be in the same scene as them because we have each other's backs in the sense that we respect each other. And we respect each other's hustle and we respect each other's style. And we're going to help each other out. I plan on having these guys on the show. It's going to be great shows for both of them. I'm going to have them separately. And I'm going to be in their showcases within the right time. But yeah, shout out to those guys. If you guys come to the show, it's going to be a treat because these guys, you're going to see them for the first time in this environment. It's going to be a great audience, but I'm telling you, these guys are going to be around for a long time and they're going to have a big impact in the scene and they're going to be influencing it on a different level. So keep an eye on those guys when you see them up on stage. They're going to bring it. I know they will. So that's just a few of the people that are going to be in the show. The other guys, I don't really know them. I know that the stuff that we've worked in class is pretty good. I know that after Bill gets done with them, it's going to be great. And I think it's important that you guys come out and just check out what's going on in the local comedy scene. You know, local meaning New York, upstate Saratoga. And I'm happy to see a lot of you guys there. I plan on selling a lot of tickets. Got a lot of people that are going to be coming to support me. And I'm looking forward to seeing every single one of them because it's a big show. And then after this show, I'm going after Clash of Titans. That's mine. I'm not saying that in a cocky way. I'm just speaking into existence. The show is mine. If I don't win it the first time, if I don't win it the second time, if I don't win it the third time, if I don't win it the fourth time, if I don't win it the fifth time, I'm going to win it at some point. And it's not going to take me 5 times. Trust me. Hopefully, I don't win it the first time. I'm not speaking into existence. Why do I say hopefully the first time? Because listen. Listen. If I go to class with Bill Keller, I'm writing 70 jokes, and I can't go into Clash of the Comics and win that, then I'm going to write 1,000 jokes. You see what I'm saying? I don't care. That I will take that down. And then it's off to the Mohegan Sun for that challenge. So this class, December 6th, if you guys can't make it out to the graduation show for this, rest assured there will be more shows. I will be doing the Clash of the Comics more than once, whether I win or regardless, just because it's an awesome show. It's a great opportunity. One of the first times I wanted to, I realized that I wanted to do comedy in this area is when I went to the Funny Bone and I saw how big it was. The Funny Bone seats about 350 people. And one of the first milestones that I want to have is maybe 2 years. I'm not going to put a time zone on it because if I can do it before then, I'll do it before then. But I want to sell that out. I want to be on a sellout show at the Funny Bone. And that's just one of my goals. I love to do that and be local, get the love from the Saratoga audience, look out there and see a lot of the people that I went to high school with. a lot of the people that listen to the podcast, just have that support and be in front of it. That's a goal of mine. And I know what I got to do to achieve it. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it. Went on a little rant there, but it was all valuable stuff I want you guys to know. Because I'm one of those people that I like to say I told you so. And I know with the drive that Chris has and the drive that Casey has, that those two kids, and I keep on calling them kids, but guess what? I can do that because I'm old. They're not kids, but they're kids. in comparison to me, they're kids. But they're going to be, in all honesty, they're going to be in the scene for a while. And I know at some point I'm going to leave this area. But when I come back, I know they'll be holding it down. And I'm just really, really excited and really fortunate to be a part of it at such an early part. And I did recommend for both of them to take the class. And like I said, they listen and they're doing it. And it's going to pay off. It's in the terms of they're going to be able to see other young, talented comics coming up and be able to identify their potential and also one day push them to go in the right direction and taking that class with Bill and see the value that that class gives and bret that person to the next level. Because if I had, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, if I had done an open mic first without going to this class, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now. Well, yeah, I would, but I wouldn't be doing comedy. Yeah, interesting night for me, guys. Hey, nothing goes perfect, but you know what? It goes. I had a few interruptions this show because of the recording that I was doing. It was threading through my Bluetooth, so I apologize for those loud dings. But it's so molded into some of the content that I have. It's just, there's nothing I can really do about it, so I apologize. The worst thing's going to happen is that you're going to think that you got a message. If you have an iPhone, you're going to think that you got a message while you were listening to this. And you're going to pick up your phone disappointedly. So I apologize for that. But overall, great episode. I'm looking forward to giving you guys more content. You will be hearing from me after this next Saturday show. Bill will be tearing apart more of my jokes. I'm going to write some funny stuff so they have more stuff to work with. Like I said, let me know if you guys liked it, the content that I was sharing or just going through and seeing how he breaks down my jokes. And let me know if you guys thought some of the stuff was funny. I thought it was hilarious. And by the time I'm done repeating it 100 times and going through my head 100 more times and then reciting it another 1,000 times, it's not going to be funny. So... but at the show, it's going to be damn funny. At the show, it's going to be damn funny. So I hope to see a lot of people there. I already know that there's going to be some special people in the audience that, as I'm recording this and as I'm looking at my stack of jokes that are written down, I got to smile because I can already visualize them looking up and laughing. I won't see them laughing because when I'm up there, I'm in the zone, you know. But I can just feel them being in the audience, and I know it's going to be a good show. I feel it, and I hope people that are listening to this, if they're in the area, they can make it out to just greet me and laugh their asses off for hopefully 8 minutes with me. It'll be more than 8 minutes, but with me, I want that 8 minutes. I want it speaking into existence, but it's coming. But yeah, that's it for now. That's what's good. Thank you for joining you, and I'll see you. Wow. Thank you for joining me. It was a pleasure joining you. Just gotta play it off. Be smooth, Mr. Young. Yeah, and that's it. All right. Peace.